Hello and welcome to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast, brought to you by Jayco, your great escape.
Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast, all the way from the hottest temperature pretty much we had this whole Tour de France. I'm saying this and I don't have the data, but it's probably not far from
it's
it. Dave McKenzie, how are you?
Oh, I'm very good, thank you. Yeah, it's up there. Maybe not quite as hot as Firenze, day one, although it does feel it today, doesn't it? It feels
pretty scorching. So to give you a bit of a picture, we are on a dual carriageway, maybe somewhere in a town of Nîmes. It's roughly, let's say, 37, 38 degrees. The tarmac is around 40 degrees. It's a hot one.
Jeez, you're hamming it up a bit, aren't you?
I'm hot, mate.
I'm hot. I'm very hot, but he's, yeah.
Am I right or am I not right?
Well, let's
draw the facts. Is it right or is it not right?
I reckon I should pull out the old weather map app and see.
Well, someone has been in a truck all day and someone's been running around. Let's guess who that is.
You're a good bellboy. You are a really good bellboy. That's why we give you that good job.
Anyway.
Let's talk about the winner, shall we?
Let's talk about the winner of this stage, Philipsen, again and again and again. We said at the beginning of this Tour de France, we were worried or scared or concerned. Is it the Philipsen?
He's not on form.
Was it the Philipsen? He wasn't the Philipsen that we saw years before, etc. Well, he did shut us up, basically.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, it took him until stage 10 to get his first win, and now he's notched up his third. May not get another one, probably won't get another one. We've sort of said today, highly documented, this was the last day probably for the sprinters. But what he has done is, and unfortunately, due to the crash of Binyam Girmay, so not getting any points, Philipsen getting maximum, he now sits on 344 points, Girmay sits on 376. And at the recording of this podcast, yet to know, are we? The condition of Girmay.
So we know Birman Girmay crossed the line. What we don't know at the time of recording of this podcast, he hasn't been on the podium. He has not done the protocol. It may not be anything special. We know maybe he's gone to do an X-ray or a check before being able to do any of the official duties.
Yeah.
But we don't know if he's going to be here tomorrow. It doesn't mean he will or he won't. But right now, we'd have to assume he will be here tomorrow. So in this podcast, we will assume that he will carry on and will be here until we hear otherwise.
Well, the other thing is too, just with that crash, and this is purely speculation because, as we say, we don't know. What we do know is he hit the deck at speed because it was in the last kilometre or so they were flying, and it was through the roundabout. The camera, the live pics that we saw actually didn't pick it up. They picked up the aftermath. So he's going to be a little bit sore, you would think, in some shape or form. So this means, hopefully, we see him front up tomorrow. But this green jersey battle is game on.
Yeah, and I'll remind you, how hot is the tarmac?
It's pretty hot. It's pretty damn hot. Yeah.
But Philipsen, let's go back to Philipsen a little bit. Three wins this year. I think it was four last year, from memory.
Yep.
So he's one less win than last year. Can he still be satisfied with his Tour de France?
Oh,
it's
massively.
A bit of a rhetorical question, but...
Yeah, massively.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, especially because his wins have come late and... I think he was obviously frustrated in one. He got DQ'd on another. But he actually kept reasonably calm. Like, he stayed quite, composed. And that he hadn't won. And I remember interviewing him a day or two before. I remember, and I showed him my tipping comp in Melbourne. And we all picked him. And I said, as a joke, look, the Aussie fans haven't given up on you. And he saw the funny side and lighter side. And he said, no, I feel good. I'm still, I'm up for the fight. So... he's a star. That's why he's a class act. That's why he won the stages he won last year and the green.
Talking of class act, let's listen to Mathieu Van Der Poel. He talks about how he's been useful to the team.
The focus is on the days I can help the team. So I'm happy with where I am at the moment. Just like last year, I hope helping him with stage wins is also good for my shape like it was last year. So. I know in advance when we come with him as a sprinter, it's for him. And I kind of like my job as well.
So that was Mathieu Van Der Poel. Important to be a role player, even if you are one of the best riders in the world, even if you are the world champion. On a stage like this one, Mathieu Van Der Poel, and like any other pretty much sprint when he was able to, he's been pulling Philipsen. And clearly today, Birman Girmay not being here, That was the difference with all, every single other sprinters.
Yeah. The others were totally left wanting. There was no, like, he jumped 200 metres to go, Phillips, and as you say, the incredible lead out by Van der Poel. And I know we expect it. He's a domestique, Van der Poel, but he's one of the best riders in the world, and he's wearing the rainbow jersey. Not that he wouldn't do that job, but it's, I think we just need to highlight the fact that he is star quality, and he's effectively sacrificed most of his chances. He's not a sprinter, not in that sense. We know that, but gee, he's been the best let-out guy here, hasn't he, for sure.
What else can we take out from a stage like this, except the fact that it was pretty boring for a long time?
It was a snooze fest, and I didn't get snoozing.
It was a bit snoozing.
I got a burger in with fries over lunch, but I think the takeaways are exactly what you said. It was a pretty boring stage. We sort of half expected it. We knew if the wind didn't whip up, then that's probably what we're going to get. The signs were there that it was windy in the morning, and it actually was. Simon Gerrans went for a ride this morning. He said that, but then the wind just dipped come the afternoon. So I think the takeaway is not so much a rest day for GC guys. When it's this hot, and even though it wasn't, you know, game on in the race until the very end, this heat affects riders. Into the third week, you know, I guess we can say deep into the third week, the temperatures like this start to affect the riders. So, you know, they got four big days ahead of them now, four really big days, excluding the Nice TT. So who pulls up the freshest? That's the question that'll be answered over the next couple of days.
Before we have a look at what's coming up on your stage tonight on SBS, quick question about Arnaud Delis. He came in here with massive objective, I would say, to first Tour de France to have his first win. He walks away with no wins. He's been putting, you know, the wheel here and there and so on. But can he be disappointed or not? Well, when you come on such a high, a big momentum.
Yeah, he will be disappointed. And, of course, he won the Belgian national champ and smoked Philipsen in a sprint finish. But he's still young. He's still got plenty of years. But, you know, he's a racer. And, by the way, he's not done.
No,
he could actually win. And tomorrow is a day that he could win, because he's not a purist in my mind. He's not a climber, but he's certainly not a purist. So he actually could get a win. Can I just digress for a second?
Yeah, go on.
I've just heard that Guermet has gone out on the podium.
Oh, okay, so that's good news.
So that's really good news. Guermet's on the podium. Let's hope he recovers okay overnight.
That's in live if you're listening to this podcast in 6 hours.
Yeah, 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 that's
but
right.
But that's how we learn the news.
My phone's buzzing as we speak.
Quick question going back to Delis. Jarrod Drisner's trooper, as we said.
Yeah.
Let's listen to him. I had a chance to talk to him straight on that finish.
Right, Jarrod, start of this third week. Probably the last sprint of this Tour de France. How are you?
Yeah, good. Had a nice rest day. It was not easy to get there after the crash, of course, and then a really hard weekend. But, I think everyone recovered well yesterday, and we were pretty strong again today in the sprint. It was really messy, actually. I'm not even sure of the the result in the end. But we had Campy, myself, and Cedric, and Arno all there in the last two kilometres. Sprinting.
So this week for you now, last sprint of pretty much of the Tour, how's it going to shape up?
Oh, I mean, the weekend's going to be a lot of suffering again, but I think the next 2 days we can be optimistic to get up the road and try and show ourselves in a breakaway. We're all feeling pretty good still, so we like our chances to get in the breakaway the next couple of days and see what we can do.
I know it's hot. Last question. That temperature, how was it today?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a few guys in the peloton said, oh, you're from Australia, you should be fine with this heat. But it's something else, I'll tell you that much.
Time for a nice bath. Thank you, Jarrod.
Cheers, thanks.
So there was Jarrod Drisner. He's feeling good. He's feeling okay despite the crash, which I didn't remind him, actually, about the crash. But the crash, let's remember that he had a crash. Pretty, you know, solid crash last week. But the week ahead now, it's like he said, it's going to be a tough week to reach Nice. But they've got opportunities here and then.
Yeah. Yeah, and Jarrod seems like he's been making the cuts in the big mountains.
Yeah.
Not no problems. I shouldn't say that. They're hard days, and you've still got to, you know, you've got to find your group and and make sure. But they do, you know, so all he's got to do is just got to have legs that he's had in the mountains thus far.
Yeah.
They don't have to be great legs, but they've just got to be legs to survive. And I think, you know, from an Aussie perspective, a guy debuting, you know, I just want to see him finish. I think I want him to feel that euphoric moment of finishing a Tour de France. I mean, that's a massive feat, you know, and we shouldn't, you know, Australia punches above its weight, I think, in terms of the Aussies that race the Tour nowadays, and we get used to it. But we just remind ourselves that every Aussie that debuts and gets to finish is something special.
Yeah, absolutely. What can we say about the other Aussies? First of all, Chris Harper did not start. Yeah. He had COVID.
He was crook too overnight and spoke to Michael Matthews. He talked about that this morning. Two things on Michael Matthews, actually. He said Harper was sick overnight, and apparently he was keen to start this morning. Yeah. And the team and team doctors said, listen, you can't. You're not
There's good. No point.
And I think he's on the Olympics squad as well, so they said, come on, bigger fish to fry. He'll be devastated. He'll be very disappointed, Chris Harper. And Michael Matthews has just messaged me, oh, good stuff, glad I could help you, you owe me.
Yeah. And let's explain why.
and you know what, he did, he produced the goods. When we interviewed him, my last question was, listen, the world famous SBS crocodile
challenge.
We need Pog. Can you bring Pog? Can you deliver him to us? And he's like, what, today? And we said, well, today would be great, but by the end of the tour. 5 minutes later, Pog literally rode down, found us first, came directly to us. He never does that, and he never comes to media before sign on. He did. And he did the croc challenge. He failed miserably. He only got two teeth.
Anyway, it's worth having a look on Instagram to have a check of how good/bad the puck was.
I think we'll give him a second attempt. Yeah, it was rushed, and he knew he had to go to sign on.
Yeah.
But big shout out, Michael Matthews. You delivered the goods. Maybe a champagne, mate, in Nice. Yeah. I'll provide you, or a bottle. Maybe we'll see.
Okay. Before we break, let's have a listen to Jerry Ryan. Jerry Ryan was here at the start. I had a quick chat with him, Jerry, and of course the owner of the team, Jayco Alula. Jerry, how are you? It's always a pleasure to see you on the roots of the Tour de France.
Oh, it's great to be here, and especially a day like today, which is a sprinter stage. Looking forward to it.
How much fire have you still have in the belly when you see this? There's one thing being sat in your office and see the paper and the spreadsheets and so on, and it's another thing to see the buses, see the fervour, see the people around you.
It's the biggest sporting event in the world on an annual basis. You just look around the people, and they come here and they cheer on the riders. Very patient. They sit around and wait for a couple of hours or longer. And you see the same faces day in and day out at different stages. So they jump to the next stage. But
yeah, absolutely. And then one last question. But there seems to be a bit of a love affair between France and Australia. Australians are always very welcome in France.
Very much so. Well, it goes back to the wars that the Aussies came across here and lost a lot of lives. And so the French have never forgotten what the Australians did during those wars.
That was Jerry Ryan, real trooper. And I said in this interview, Maka, it's one thing seeing and loving cycling from your desk. It's something else seeing and loving cycling from the side of the road.
Yeah, yeah. And good question. And you know, Jerry's authentic, and he doesn't have to, you know, he's been part of the cycling family and fabric for over 30 years now in Australia. I think it's twofold. It's passion. And of course he wants to see some sort of return, and he wants to he likes to get his money back if he can, but let's face it, you don't get 25 million euros back roughly per year that you spend on a team and that you've bankrolled, financed or underwritten for the best part of 12 years now, and of course all the other money that he's spent on cycling. So we're so lucky to have him. We can never take it for granted, and we should just keep enjoying his support.
100%. Yeah. Okay, we take a short break. And Maka, have you ever wondered how Jonas Vingegaard is seen in his own country?
Yes.
Yeah, you I know have you wondered. Have. Well, yes. Stay tuned because we have the answer straight after this.
Ready to take your cycling adventures to the next level? Since 1975, Jayco has been proudly manufacturing in Australia and is the largest name in caravans, pop-tops, camper trailers, hybrids, motorhomes and campervans. With the largest service network in Australia and unbeatable access to parts and accessories, Jayco is here for you. Cycle by day and relax by night with your fully equipped Jayco to keep you out of the elements. Jayco is built here for out there. Visit jayco.com.au to discover the range.
Get the ultimate Tour de France experience with SBS On Demand. Download the app on your preferred device or connected TV to access the Tour de France hub. Enjoy full live coverage, stage replays, extended highlights, mini stage recaps, and bite-sized stage-winning moments. It's all available anytime, anywhere, and streaming for free at your home of cycling. SBS On Demand.
So, Maka, I have to ask you before the ad break, how Jonas Vingegaard is seen and received in his country. Well, I had a chance to talk to their main commentator. Some might say he's the Danish Matthew Kinnan. Dennis, you
well,
know
he is. Yeah, he's been around. He was at the tour when I did my first. He'd already been part of the fabric in the media compound. So he's very experienced and very respected.
Yeah, let's have a listen. Dennis, let's talk about the main man of this Tour de France for you, Jonas Vingegaard. I'll ask you first of all, how do you say his name? We've been saying Vingegaard.
And that's exactly correct. Vingegaard. Vingegaard.
Perfect. I mean, the question that we have on our minds in Australia is, how easy? Because English is, of course, not his first language, so we don't get the Jonas that you guys may know more than us. How is he in a day-to-day of the race of the Tour de France?
The funny thing is, I don't really know the answer to that, because even in Denmark, we don't know very much of the private person, Jonas Vingegaard. He is very shy. He keeps very much to himself. He doesn't let people into his private life too much. And not because he actively tries to keep people out, but it's just not his nature. He doesn't enjoy being in the public eye. He doesn't enjoy having cameras all over. He accepts it. He tolerates it because it's part of his job, but he doesn't enjoy it. Exactly the opposite to Tadej Pogacar, actually. I cannot imagine two people being more different as private persons than those two.
So we don't see him at Christmas shows or New Year's Eve shows. Like, he's here, he does the job of cycling, and that's what he does.
Exactly. He keeps it to a minimum, his appearances in shows like that. Of course, working for a TV station like my own, we always want, when he's won Tour de France, he's number one guy we call, or try to call, because nobody has his number. That's another thing. He doesn't show up. He doesn't enjoy it. We see his parents. We sometimes see his wife and his daughter, but if he can be away somewhere on a training camp, that's where he prefers to be.
So talk to us about how was the news when he had a terrible crash. Of course, he was for us terrible to follow, and yet still a little bit surprised to see him at the level he is right now. How is this in Denmark? How is this seen in Denmark?
First of all, it was completely breaking news everywhere, every newspaper, every TV station in Denmark. Of course, it was a very, very big story what happened, and we were afraid for his life. Then we didn't really know much about what was going on. He was in hospital. He got out of hospital. We didn't really see him. I remember the first time some spectator, some private person caught him on his phone out on a training ride in Denmark where he lives.
On the cycling path, is that this one?
Yes, exactly. That's the one. And we didn't really get any information. Then he went on this altitude camp in Tignes, and we knew very little. But to see him at this level now is just, I don't have words for it. I cannot even try to imagine what he's been through to get to that level. It's amazing.
Yeah, no matter what the result is at the end of the next week, just seeing him here battling is impressive. How is Tadej Pogacar seen then? Because it's the big rivalry. How is Tadej Pogacar seen?
That is very, very interesting. And between my colleagues, we're talking a lot about this. In Denmark, I'll put it this way, people who really follow cycling and know about cycling have tremendous respect for Tadej Pogacar. I would not hesitate for a second in saying Tadej Pogacar is the best bike rider in the world. But to other people in Denmark who don't follow cycling that much, who maybe only watch the Tour de France because it's the Tour de France and don't watch other bike races, they see Pogacar as the enemy. And riding as he's riding right now, there's a lot of speculation in Denmark on social media and stuff like that about he has to be cheating. Whereas if it was Jonas beating him, then that would just be natural. Nobody would ask questions to Jonas. So that's kind of interesting that we sort of we have those two opinions in Denmark. But I think among us who follow cycling, huge respect for Tadej Pogacar and so much gratitude that we live in a generation and a time where we see these two big champions giving the world bike races like we've never seen before. Personally, I think the duel, the rivalry between those two is possibly the most intense, exciting, fascinating in the history of cycling.
Yeah, we agree in Australia. And throw in there someone like Remco Evenepoel, yeah. And you go, oh, the mix is incredible. But how is it to commentate on the race? Because surely, the public at home, it's got one man on his mind. So for you as a commentator, there must be a certain tension or a certain pressure as well on pretty much every word you say.
It is so difficult these years. This exact part of commentating these years is so difficult. I would almost call it a sort of a poisonous environment, because if we say, I have a lot of respect for Tadej Pogacar, and I think he's the best bike rider in the world. I think Jonas is probably the best Grand Tour rider, but Tadej is the best bike rider in the world. But if I say that on TV, I get a lot of hate and I get a lot of criticism for being negative about Jonas. And I'm not negative about Jonas. I just feel the need to praise Tadej for what he gives cycling and the athlete that he is. And they're two different athletes, two different types of bike riders. But it's difficult for us to commentate objectively and neutral, praise Tadej Pogacar, because people hear it as criticism of Jonas, which it is not. So that is very, very difficult. And I try to find a balance between these things, but it really is difficult. As I said before, I'm grateful that we live in a generation we see these two athletes, but I will always insist that for me to say something positive about the other guy, the guy that is not Danish, I have to do that. If I don't do that, then I don't do my job.
How does someone like Pedersen lives with the notoriety that Bobby Vingegaard has? Is he famous? Is he a different kind of person, though, that Vingegaard can be?
Mads Pedersen is the complete opposite of Jonas Vingegaard. He's very outspoken, very honest, no filter, a fantastic person. And if you ask me, Mads has never commented on that, but if you ask me what I think, yes, I think he's a little bit envious of Jonas. I think so. But I know they respect each other a lot, and they're not competitors in any way. Of course, they're different types of bike riders, but yes, I think Mads would like to a little bit to also be as popular as Jonas is. But Mads is immensely popular in Denmark.
I've got one last question for you, and I let you after that go on with your work. But a couple of years ago, we were in Copenhagen for the Grand Départ. Fantastic. I loved it. Absolutely loved Copenhagen. It was one of the best Grand Départ I've been to. Has the Grand Départ changed the city at all? The city is already well into cycling. We saw it, and I was amazed by that. But has it left a trace somewhere, somehow, in the city?
I think the trace it has left was more in terms of pride among the Danish population. We were proud that it went so well, proud to have staged a success like that. Of course, the cycling interest in the Danish population is has skyrocketed even more. Traces on the city, like physically, geographically, I wouldn't say, but the pride is still felt, and we still all look back on those days and just are so happy that it happened.
Tivoli Garden was on fire. It was beautiful.
And I was on stage as the presenter for that team presentation, and it was something I will never, ever forget.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, the link with Australia, your queen, is also originally from Australia. So yeah, there's a natural link.
Yeah, and we're so proud of her. We're so proud of our new king and our new queen. They're such an amazing couple. And yeah, so, but... Well, to live in a generation like this and having had the Tour de France in Denmark, I feel so blessed and so lucky to be the commentator when this happens.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There we go. That was Dennis from the Danish TV. Interesting that no journalist has Jonas Vingegaard's number. You've got Michael Matthews texting you saying, mate, you owe me this and you do this.
Yeah, well, the Aussies, you know, we sort of, you would think
you would think that the Danish television,
the main commentator,
would at least have, not necessarily Jonas Vingegaard on the speed dial,
yeah,
but have a number.
Yeah,
at least,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. And in some ways, it's nice. It's nice that he doesn't. And yeah, it's nice Vingegaard, you know, likes to keep a quiet sort of private life outside of cycling. I mean, that's the way he comes across, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He comes across like a fairly private person, but a real respectable, respectful person as well.
Okay, let's have a look at what is happening tonight on SBS and on the roads of the Tour de France. It is not a sprint. It's a bit of a tricky stage, and we're going to... I want you to say this word, Micah.
Where are we going? Oh, no. Okay, I'm going to try. Saint-Paul-Trois-Châteaux.
Yeah, Saint-Paul-Trois-Châteaux. Yeah, that's okay. Where we're starting.
Super d'Evoli.
Yeah, super d'Evoli.
Oh, it's pretty close.
Nah, not bad.
It looks like first attempt.
It looks like you've rehearsed.
First attempt, my friend. Come on.
Talk to us about this stage.
Yeah, okay. So 177.8 kilometres. Category 2, Category 1, Category 3, all at the back end. Bonification 10 seconds at the top of the Category 1. And importantly, this is a crunch point, which have not been crunch points in this race thus far. But listen to this, folks. At 114 kilometres completed is the intermediate sprint.
Mm-hmm.
Gourmet, hopefully he's good. He's on the bike tomorrow. And Philipsen, that will be absolutely game on. Intermarché Wanty, they'll want a break to get up the road to protect those points. And for Philipsen's team, they'll want to keep it together. For sure. He's got to make up points. And this is the only place now where he's going to do it. So it's game on.
Okay. Anything else that you could predict for a stage like this one?
I finally think a breakaway is going to survive.
Okay.
A breakaway will survive the day. Because the climbs come at the back end, it will be attacking. And it may take until the intermediate sprint to go. So if you watch tonight and you were a little bit disappointed because it was a bit of a snooze fest and you fell asleep, coming tomorrow, because it's going to be big. I think it'll be all guns blazing tomorrow.
Yeah, 100%. Thank you, Micah, for joining us. It was a real pleasure to talk to you. And then I'm sure we'll see you where?
Super d'Evoli.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast. Brought to you by Jayco, your great escape.